I love the smell coming off the microphone. That sort of,
you know, what you smell know, that is?
What is that?
It's poison.
Bullshit.
No, it's poison.
What poison?
It's one of the chemicals that they use to make it. It's actually poisonous.
And I'm sniffing that in?
You're sniffing that in.
Is that killing me?
It probably will be.
Fuck!
Welcome to The Writer and the Critic, a monthly podcast devoted mostly to speculative fiction, books, reviews, and the odd bit of idle gossip. I'm your host, Kirsten McDermott, and your co-host, Ian Mond, is sitting to my right. How are you this fine evening, Ian?
I'm lovely, although this is the evening or the day that Steve Jobs died, just to put this in historical context.
Yes, yeah, I read that this afternoon. That was sudden, actually.
Well, not sudden. He had pancreatic cancer.
Oh, I know, but he had done a press conference not so long ago when he retired from Apple.
Over a very year ago.
Yeah, okay. Fair yeah,
enough. It's not really sudden. I mean, everyone was expecting it to happen. But yeah, I just wanted to put this into historical context because it's also our 12th episode, which is the cake episode because we've been going for a year, but you didn't bake any cake.
But your wife baked brownies.
She did, with Reese's Pieces.
And they're wonderful.
Have you already had one?
I did.
When did you do that?
While you were indisposed.
Oh, then, yeah. Wait, I wasn't in there for that long.
Well, it was only a little bit of brownie.
Okay. Well, just stuff it down your throat. She said to me to do Reese's Pieces adds that level of saltiness to the brownie.
I didn't even know you could get Reese's Pieces in Australia.
Yeah, there's an American shop.
There's the stuff that E.T. had in the movie, right?
Yeah. Okay, I've never seen E.T., but...
No.
How many times do I have to mention this on a podcast?
Keep forgetting. Okay.
I've never seen E.T., but that... If it was Reese's Pieces, then yes, you can buy Reese's Pieces in Australia.
They're peanut butter cuppy things, aren't they?
Or? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're disgusting, actually.
Well, they're really nice in the brownies.
Yeah, well done. And well done to my wife. She is quite good. She did this. She was doing it early in the morning and she was proud to show me the brownies before I left for work.
But you tweeted about the brownies as though you'd only just seen them.
No, I hadn't seen the finished product. She was still baking.
Oh,
I don't know if you understand the concept of baking, but it's a procedure that's involved. Oh, yeah, that's right, gingerbread man, you do bake. You know it takes time, though, yeah? Oh, don't give me – you know your looks don't come out in audio. It's just blank.
I think they come out.
No.
Anyway, we're – so, yes, our 12th episode. Happy birthday to us.
Yes.
Yay.
But I don't think we should do anything big until we get to our 50th, if we're still alive.
50th.
That's 4 years away.
Yeah, okay.
Can you imagine? That's three in a bit.
Oh. Right.
But what we should do is make this obviously the shortest episode possible.
We should.
By not talking shit for 25 minutes.
Indeed. We can go straight.
What are the two books are we doing, Kirsten?
Oh, wow. That was really quick.
I know. So when you do your show notes, it'll be like...
Zero, no show notes.
92 seconds.
Yeah, one of those people who fast forward about 20, 30 minutes. We're like, what? What? What happened? The two books. Well, the first book we're going to do. Actually, I need to do a disclaimer.
Oh, controversy.
Yes. Well, no, not controversy. Just.
But no one ever says disclaimer, and it's not controversy. Why would you do it? Do it. Do the disclaimer.
Because the first book we're going to talk about is Bluegrass Symphony, which is the debut collection by Lisa L. Hannett, who's an Adelaide author. And the book just came out this year through Ticonderoga. And as such, it's eligible for a whole bunch of awards.
Yes.
And I'm judging a whole bunch of awards.
What are you judging, Kirsten?
I'm judging the Aurealis Awards in the horror category. So
you put your hand up for that, did you?
I did. So that's because I am insane.
That's right, because you've got no time on your hands. But anyway.
Well, I'm not reading anything till after my novel's done. Well, I'm reading a bit. Anyway, so I'm judging the Aurealis Awards.
Yes.
And that's the short stories and novels. So there's a whole bunch of stories in Lisa's collection that will be eligible. And I was also asked to judge the Australian Shadows Award. So I'm doing that too. And that's novels and novellas. So there might be one of Lisa's stories that's eligible for that as well.
Okay. So without me shit-stirring here, and I promise I'm not shit-stirring, all right? But I'm just asking, we're going to be talking about these stories here. Mm-hmm. Obviously... And without spoiling the podcast, didn't mind a few of the stories. You did recommend this to me.
Yes.
So you actually liked the collection.
I did recommend it to you before I became
charge. True. And we should tell Lisa, who might be plutzing at the moment, wondering if this is going to be a tough podcast for her. We should tell her, no, it's going to be a pretty good one for her. So don't worry.
It's okay, Lisa. Breathe.
Yeah, breathe. Breathe. but how are you able to do this and yet remain impartial?
I will not remain impartial. Judging isn't impartial.
No, but
– judging is highly subjective.
Yes, true. Fascinating that.
I do need to make clear that any and all opinions that I make on this podcast in regards to any and all stories in Lisa's collection are my own and not reflecting the judging.
Because the Orialis is a panel.
It's a panel.
And, of course, everyone on that could hate Lisa's book and you may be the only voice that likes it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But so, if a story in here wins, writer and critic is not at fault is what you're saying. Just getting it clear.
No, I don't think we're that influential. No, simply just that you know, these are my own opinions, and while I am a judge, there are two other judges on both of the panels, and I am only one third of the panel.
Who are they? You're allowed to mention them?
Is it
actually public? Are you allowed to mention who the judges are?
I think so. I don't know.
Maybe don't. Because I know what's going to happen. You'll mention them, you'll get guilty, you'll edit it out.
No, I think they're on the Orialis website anyway.
Oh, so well, you can go check if they can.
Anyway, so that was my little disclaimer.
Okay.
And so, hopefully I don't get booted off the judging panel.
Bluegrass Symphony. Now, Lisa.
Lisa.
I've met her once, maybe twice.
Okay.
Maybe three times. A handful.
You have a great memory.
It's great. Know her more as her alter ego, The Brain, because that's what although I always thought Angela Slater, who mentions it, was calling her Slater. Brian. Slater, sorry. Slater. It's SLA something or other. I thought she was calling her Brian.
Hello, Angela.
Because I get the A and I transposed. So
I thought she was calling her Brian.
Yeah, so I see this written by Brian L. Hennett, not Brain.
Okay.
Christ, it's going to be a long podcast and it's only just started. But, so Where was she born?
She's originally from Canada.
That explains nothing, really.
The accent.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She does have an accent. Yeah, that explains that.
She was born in Canada and lived in Canada for quite a while and is now living in Adelaide, and she's just completed a PhD in, by the way, can I just say, Lisa completed a PhD in medieval Icelandic literature.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. And she was looking at it as literature, as you know, and she, because there's not a lot of translations around for what she was studying, in fact, none, she also translated it herself.
What the fuck? We should just stop there. We can't get better than that. That's not things like Beowulf and shit or Grendel or shit like that, is
no,
it?
That wasn't what she was doing her PhD on, no. But yeah, so she –
really? That's amazing.
She provided most of her own translations the work that she was –
But yeah, that doesn't appear at least unless it's hidden there.
No, I don't think so.
In the book, in the stories. She hasn't – because usually when people are doing like a doctorate or something,
I think
they like to feed that doctorate into their fiction if
– Yeah, sure, unless you just want to take a holiday from your doctorate when you're not doing it.
Yeah, true. No, fair point. Anything else about her on your little notes? Because obviously you're really close friends that you had to write down stuff about her.
Oh, I just downloaded her bio from her website in case I forgot something.
Oh, okay.
But no, actually what I did want to mention that her second collection will be out next year. Well, it's a co-authored collection with Angela Slater, and that's going to be out next year also through Ticonderoga, which I'm really looking forward to.
That's great. Well, this one is fucking brilliant. Not every story, but it's it's pretty damn good. We disagree on the story we liked the most, which is always the start of a good conversation. And we disagree on the story we didn't like. We liked the least.
We didn't like the most. That's horrible, Ian.
Shut up. but should we start positive or negative?
I don't think we have to. Hello, Lisa.
Look.
You may want to pick up that glass of wine after
No. Seriously. There's 11, 12, 13. There's about 13 stories, and I'd say 11 of them are top notch.
Yeah, no, I think it's an incredibly, incredibly strong collection.
The strike rate's brilliant. I mean, the one that I didn't like the most is because I didn't get it, not because I didn't like it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It wasn't your story.
No, that's Commonplace Sacrifices, which is the earliest story, and so she's probably got the softest touch for it because it's, you know, the first, it was published in 2009, and it's probably the one that she has, you know, most endeared to. But I just didn't get it.
2009 is not that long ago.
Oh, well, it wasn't making out. It was 150 years ago, and it was written on papyrus. I'm just saying that what did you think of Commonplace Sacrifices?
I liked it.
Did you get it? What was the little thing that was doing the thing?
Well, we're not going to spoil these anthologies because they're very, very new.
But you meant to know what that is? Because I didn't pick it up. It must be thick. there's a thing doing stuff as part of the story.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, like a guardian angel type of thing, but not really an angel. In fact, not an angel, but, you know.
Wow, okay. that's really clarified that story for me. But that was about it for me, really, in terms of stories that I just didn't gel with.
And I think, just because you it didn't quite hit home for you.
Yeah, and it's not the writing, and it's just, yeah, it just didn't hit home. I loved Yeah, you've just taken the book away from me,
Sorry,
so I can't remember the title. And this is a beautiful hardcover, by the way, Ticonderoga. This is gorgeous hardcover, lovely cover. Which didn't Lisa do the cover or something?
Yes, I think she did the cover design. Yep.
So beautifully put together book.
She's a very talented lady.
She is. To Snuff a Flame, which is one of the longest stories in there, and it's probably close to novella length, I would say, because it's 34 pages.
Yeah, it's pretty long, that one.
And it's all about a daughter trying to free her father from prison. What's brilliant about it, it's sort of got an urban fantasy feel to it because the daughter
it's got a rural fantasy feel to it when you think about it.
The whole
book is this beautiful, wonderful,
yes, it's all rural fantasy. Yes, no, yeah. Fair point. I mean urban in a genre rather than the place setting, so thank you, Kirsten. Where's my pointy stick? Why don't I get a bloody stick of point in or something.
When I say something wrong.
Anyway, so Lola May has the ability to take any item and basically animate it in some way or do magical things with it.
Yeah.
And it's quite a powerful little thing. And I was keep thinking husband, but it's her father.
Yeah,
could do the same. But what's great about it is the point of view character, who we're not entirely sure who the point of view character is. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah.
For the first half. And then when it's revealed who it is, I think it's even more complicated as to that relationship between the point of view character and Lola and the father. And it just adds that lovely sense of layering to it because you're not sure what's going on, whether, you know, why is this person spying on Lola May for the story? You know, it seems odd and stalkery and weird, but it all makes sense and it's beautifully written. The voice throughout all the stories, even the one I wasn't that keen on, is gorgeous.
You don't have to keep saying that.
Yeah, sorry, Lisa.
No, I think, just as an overview for the anthology, it really is a remarkable book because, for a start, it's a debut collection. The second writer we're going to be talking about, Rob Shearman, has also had a debut collection, which was pretty much all original fiction.
Mortal Coil, which is
in there,
that was I'm answering your question.
Yeah.
Tiny Mortal Coil had been published elsewhere,
but everything else was
original.
And the same with Lisa's book. There's only one story in here that's previously published, which is Commonplace Sacrifices. So that's
stop mentioning it, Kirsten.
So that's sort of unusual for a start, because most debut collections would gather works that have been previously published by the author, and there may be two or three new ones that are in there for original to the collection. So to have a collection that is almost completely new fiction is unusual in itself. And it's so unified, this collection, in terms of the theme and the voice, as you said, and the settings and the place. It's this wonderful collection
repetitive.
Of stories.
Not that, repetitive at all.
No, not repetitive. It's just like it's sort of a huge puzzle and every piece fits together, but they're all distinct pieces.
Yeah.
And that's also quite unusual, I think, for a debut collection and for a lot of collections.
By far the best talking squirrel in fiction history.
Yes.
that's in that story. I really
yes.
liked, the little talking
with
squirrel.
The stuffing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing, and I think this book is it's such a good book. It's a really, really impressive collection, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does with the rest of her career, actually. I think it's going to be fairly mind-blowing. I might have to kill her now.
No, don't do that, because I'd like to read her stuff. No, actually, it's worth pointing out that I was on Coode Street. Do you remember?
Yes,
did you hear that last
I know
week?
You cheated on me.
I cheated on you.
You didn't even tell me.
No, because you get upset.
I downloaded the podcast. I started playing it, and then
I mentioned you.
Are.
I mean, and then I
there
told you.
You are.
I mentioned you.
You did.
Is that nice?
Yes.
But on a previous one, between Jonathan and Gary, maybe episode 35 or whatever, Jonathan talks about writers bringing out a collection too early.
That was a while ago.
Where they've got a few really good stories, but a lot of the others are very minor and not very good.
Yeah.
And it's all about finding the right time to bring out a collection where you've really got something that kills. And Lisa's taken a big risk here because these are, in a sense, untested, unproven stories. They haven't been out into the wild. She hasn't got that feedback. I mean, she's obviously given it to her friends to read, but they haven't gone out to the magazines. And she's confident enough, and Russell, the publisher, confident enough to say, well, let's put them together because they're thematically similar.
Yeah, they are.
And let it out there. And she's produced an amazing collection of stories.
No, she has.
It's a real bold move, in my opinion.
No, I think it's an incredibly impressive book. And there are two or three stories in there that are just phenomenal stories.
8 seconds?
The Short Go. Because it's called The Short Go, A Future in 8 Seconds.
Oh, yeah. I've just called it 8 Seconds.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, that's fantastic.
That's right. The Short Go, A Future in 8 Seconds. Yeah, that's what you called
it. That's what I just said.
Yeah. That is a great sort of weirdly SF story, but not.
Well, they're all sort of fantastical. I mean, they're rural fantasy. She set up this world, which is this loose collection of fictional North American Midwestern counties, as it were.
Although there's one thing it doesn't do, Daniel, you say that, unless I missed something, and maybe I did and it was subtle. The stories don't seem to connect character. Like you don't get references to
previous they're not,
characters.
It's they're, not,
they're all,
it's not a mosaic novel. They're discrete short stories.
And for some reason I thought it would. No, I wasn't disappointed. I thought we'd get references to other characters or from previous stories, and that it would sort of all become this holistic thing.
Yeah. I don't. Unless you say there's some sly little references somewhere, I didn't pick up any of that.
That doesn't mean it's bad. I just wanted to.
That doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah, but go back to 8 seconds. As I'm calling it.
Yeah, that story just is phenomenal. It's such a good story. It's set around a rodeo, which is where you get the 8 seconds because that's how long you have to stay on the back of generally the horse, but not in this story. In this story, it's a wolf.
Yeah.
They're riding wolves at the rodeo. And so there's the story is told in these flashes of what are meant to be sort of oracular.
Yeah, what will happen in the future?
But then,
if he stays on the wolf for 8 seconds, this is the outcome.
Yeah,
okay, I'm not going to say anymore.
No, but I mean, the story itself is really good, but
there are minotaurs in it, and you go because you know. Oh, this is the thing I loved about the stories. You start one, and you're off put straight away. You're on the wrong foot. And you see a reference to Minotaur, like in that one early on. You think it's maybe the name of a football club, or you don't actually think. You don't actually think there's actual Minotaurs in the story until they
actually. You know what? By that point, I was thinking, oh great, they're going to be Minotaurs.
Yeah, I'm a little thick, so
that's in the middle of the book, and I did read this sort of in only one or two sittings because
I savor the stories over time.
I had to blurb it, so I had to read it.
Did you blurb?
Yeah.
Have you disclaimed that?
Well, it's on. Hello, I like the book.
So not only you have to disclaim the fact that, Aurealis and all that, but you should conflict of interest. Did you get paid for that blurb? Was that paid?
No, of course it wasn't.
Is this cash
paid
for comments?
It's cash for arcs. I mean, comments for arcs. That's what it is.
Oh, I'm fine.
I got an arc, which you have and haven't given back.
Yes, yeah,
very rude.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, no. So I did read it all at once.
But what I'm trying to say is that
feel of
you've got to go back to the start of the stories because they do put you in a place you're not sure where it's going, and then when you go back, you go ha ha ha, because the language is odd or anything, but it's just the nature of the voice and the nature of the storytelling that it does. For me, it was a bit, it wasn't, off-putting is not the right word. What am I, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
When you're caught by surprise, when you're not sure where, it doesn't matter. You look, what?
No, I don't know.
Someone's telling us what the word is now as they're listening to the podcast, or they're saying, shut up because you're talking crap again, or both.
Caught off guard.
Yeah, that's it. You're caught off guard. Oh, wow, that was so good, Kirsten. You should write novels. You're caught off guard at the start, and, oh, you know what's a great story? What? Fur and Feathers.
I love Fur and Feathers. Fur and Feathers is possibly my favourite in the collection. That one and The Short Go, and I also love the final story.
That's another example of a story where you don't actually take seriously some of the things that are mentioned at the beginning of the story. You're caught off guard. Because then you go, oh, wait, shit, that actually...
She actually really did mean that.
That's actually... Yeah. And that's what I loved about it.
Yeah, well, that's it. The story, I mean, the stories themselves are playing at being metaphors and analogies, obviously. But within the stories, there aren't too many metaphors and analogies. I mean, those, you know, when she says there are minotaurs, there are minotaurs.
Yeah.
So it's all of the fantastical elements are... I mean, actually, every single story is a fantastical story.
Like the last one?
Oh, it's the last one.
That was a great – I've got to say, and that's the other thing. The book is structured really well in terms of the stories and the order they're in, which is always a tough thing to do. But to end off with what is it?
Forever Miss Topeka County.
Yeah, Forever Miss Topeka County. Maybe not my favourite story, but it's one of my favourites. It leaves that great taste in your mouth of the book. It just sums it all up. You know, perfectly.
Yeah, the last line. I mean, it's the last line of the story. The last line of the book is just pitch perfect.
You can't read it out, can you? Without spoiling.
You know what? Actually, I think I can, but it wouldn't mean as much unless you've read the story, so I won't.
Okay. And again, that's another one where again you're caught off guard and you're saying, "Wait a moment, wait a second."
That's the last story. You were still being caught off guard.
Oh, she was doing it to me. Lisa, stop doing it, I was saying to myself. And my wife was saying, who's Lisa? And I was saying, no one you need to know about. And it went worse from there. But I was saying, stop doing that because you're catching me off guard with the thing and the fat. Whereas Sherman, who we're not going to get to yet, so Rob, just wait, all right?
Yeah. Yeah, settle down.
I've gotten used to his stuff, so I wasn't as caught off guard. Although I can see you could be caught off guard by his work. You know, I'm just going to say caught off guard for the rest of this podcast.
I wish I hadn't brought the phrase up. No.
No. What else have you have to say? So that's the end of the book. Which story did you like?
There's none I didn't like. I actually wasn't. I wasn't as enamored of Snuff the Flame as you were.
But
I think that's because I actually think it was because it was a longer story, and I think from the point of view of the fantastical elements that she uses and the very straightforward way that she uses them within the narrative, I think that works best in a shorter form, in a form that's a bit lighter, that just sort of.
So you think that story could have been shorter, is what you're saying?
No, I don't think that story could have been shorter because everything that was put into that story, it needed the length of
it. It's the sustaining a longer story.
It's the sustaining of it, and I'm not – I mean, as I say, it's not a bad story and I enjoyed it, but I don't think it was one of the strongest in the collection, and I think that might be due to the length, just stretching it a little.
I could disagree 100%. I thought
you're allowed to do that because
of the nature of the point of view character and the fact that halfway through it's revealed who that is and then it adds that layer and also the relationship that person has with a few other people and you really begin to feel what's at stake here. It sustained it for me. I would say that though about the other longer story in the book,
the vampire one.
Yes.
Yes. I think
that one doesn't necessarily sustain. The full, or at least I thought it was going to be more epic than it was. I don't know why though. Epic's not the right word.
It was going to be more epic.
Yeah, well,
you thought it was going to be. I don't know what you mean.
No, I don't know either. Forget that. Maybe that one doesn't sustain its length, but maybe it does. Considering I don't know what I'm talking about.
I really like. It's actually
an interesting take on vampires.
It was a really good take on vampires. And you know that they're hard to do these days because you know. Sparkles.
Yeah.
And sparkles. Other things.
Although I just read a Karen Joy Fowler story from this year, Subterranean.
Yes.
Younger Women.
Oh, did you read that? Yeah, that's an awesome story.
Isn't that just I'm sorry, Lisa, but
So yeah, tangent.
Yeah, it's like tangent. I just finished that today.
Yeah, no, that story is fantastic. I mean, it's basically about, it's told from the point of view of a mother whose teenage daughter brings home a vampire.
Yes.
As her boyfriend.
Yes.
And it's an awesome story. It's fantastic.
You should read that, and you should read Lisa's.
You should read the whole issue of that particular Subterranean Press magazine, actually. It's a young adult issue.
Oh, okay.
And there's a Kelly Link story in there. It's a really, really impressive issue.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a great story, but sorry, I didn't mean to do that tangent, but I just read it.
I think that's the one it's in. I don't know.
I think you're right. I think you are spot on. But the vampires in these are your traditional – sort of.
Well, they're nasty.
They're nasty, yeah.
Yeah, they're not your romantic lead.
No, and that's probably the ickiest one of the lot, although the first story is pretty icky as well.
I don't think the first story is icky. I think the first story is... if you've got an insect phobia.
Yeah, you don't want to read the first story.
I'd say the vampire one is probably the ickiest in terms of like a physical bodily horror.
Yeah.
But then it's vampires, so you'd kind of want that. Even the stories, and there's really, really sad stories in this collection, but they're written.
Like the one about the guy who has to bury his girlfriend. Like the town chooses the best-looking girl.
Yeah. And the moth. The moth one. Carousel. Even Carousel is such a sad story. Actually, Carousel, which opens the collection, is a really beautifully, poignantly sad story. And then so is Forever Mr. Pickwick County, which ends it. You've got this note which just kind of gets carried throughout the whole collection. And I think it's a remarkable book. So,
would you recommend it?
Oh, well, what do you think about that, Ian?
Actually, they've not paid me enough to recommend it. You hear that, Russell? I need a few more trade hardcovers.
Where's your quote? I want to read your quote out. So this is what Kirsten McDermott said on the inside flap. Take a scruff of Minotaur hair and a handful of mermaid scales. Is there a mermaid in it?
Oh, for Jesus
Christ. Yeah, shit. Oh, fuck. Shit. That was bad. Sorry, I didn't read the book, and I just said a very stupid...
I can't... Did you read the book?
Yes,
really?
Shut up. No, because if then I say anything more, it'll be spoilers. Take a scruff of minotaur hair, and a handful of mermaid scales, mix them with moth dust and the bloody feathers of a murdered oracle, and you might get a taste of the strange and dream-soaked magic that Lisa Hannard conjures with this remarkable debut collection, Bluegrass Symphony. Oh, debut collection, full stop. Bluegrass Symphony, Christ, this is long, introduces a rare and original voice whose stories linger dark and luscious and bold as tarnished brass long after you're finishing reading them. Why are you trying to impress people reading that with your writing? It should be about her writing.
I was trying to reflect her writing in my writing because that's...
It's a great quote, though. I'd love that quote.
That's kind of how she...
If I ever wrote something, I'd love that quote.
You have to pay me.
No. Do you get paid? Again, cash for comments, as I told you. What do you think of Anne Vandermeer's introduction? That was actually really interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. And it's actually I read it last because I never read introductions first because I've been burnt several times.
Like Peter Straub and that.
Yeah. But it's actually, you could read it first. Like having read the book and then read it, if you get the book, you, by all means, go forth and read the introduction before you plunge into the stories because it's just very nice. It doesn't have any spoilers. It's just a very nice setup of the world of the stories.
But written by someone who's obviously excited by this collection.
Yeah. And so she should be. It's a really, really good book. I mean, it's phenomenally good.
Can I read one other quote?
Yeah.
And it says, Lisa L. Hannard's collection plays like a country music album composed in the darker places of imagination, the little corners that you don't want to look in as you tap your foot to the catchy beat. Coolly beautiful then coldly brutal. This is one of the most unnerving debuts in years. Written by Robert Shearman.
Why didn't you read that in a funny voice? Because I just get the funny. He's got a funny voice.
He does. He does. He's got that British thing going. My wife thinks it's cute. I shouldn't have said that. Yeah, so that's a segue. That's my segue. Oh, you just ruined my segue by interrupting with your whole, why didn't you do that in a funny voice?
I didn't realise we were finished with Lisa's.
Oh, you want to say anything more about Lisa? I mean, how many have we done on the, we've done at least half hour. Christ, what does she want from us? I'm in trouble again, aren't I? Well, look. We haven't actually finished with a book because I just quoted a thing of the book. But Bluegrass Symphony, Ticonderoga Publications. That's Mr. Russell B. Farr. Wonderful novel. How much does it cost to buy the hardcover?
Oh.
Well, there's an e-book coming out as well, too.
There is.
Which isn't out yet.
Yeah. This was a limited hardcover. I'm sure they still have some left. I think it was around about $80 or something. I can't remember, honestly.
But there is an e-book coming out.
The trade, I think, is about $30 or $35. And, yeah, there will be an e-book. So you definitely should be able to find it wherever you are in the world at some point in time. And I highly recommend it. Speaking as someone who's not actually judging any collections.
Oh, well, that's important.
Yes. I'm only judging individual short stories. But as a collection, I would not be surprised to see it turn up. I would Stoker? Love to see this on the World Fantasy Ballot.
Well, I mentioned did you hear what I said in the last Good Street? I said, but I thought it wouldn't because it won't get the exposure unless people like us talk about it. Mm. Which we're doing. But we're not listening to it probably enough people. I don't know.
Well, anyway, I mean, I think this is...
It's all about us, not about
This book, and it's this wonderful burgeoning, proto-tradition in Australian spec fic at the moment of this gorgeous, lush, your phone is making a noise again, of this magical, fantastical storytelling, and you see it in Lisa's book, you see it in the work of Angela Slater, you see it with Margot Lanigan, and there's just some amazing, amazing work coming out in that really sort of liminal fantasy genre, which is hard to categorize.
And it's not about a sunburnt Australia. It's a very...
No, well, this is set in a fictional American Midwest sort of thing. It's what you get from the dialogue and the...
Which gives it an exotic flavour, but without... No, it does. It does.
Exotic.
To me, it does.
Okay. Probably not if you live in Arkansas, but...
Okay. But sorry, I didn't mean to cut through your point, which is a good point.
Yeah.
That this is... Yeah. And it's exciting times. And her best pal, who she's co-writing with, Angela, is also much awarded, much Absolutely. Featured.
Well, I mean, Sourdough has ended up on the World Fantasy Award ballot this year, which is one of Angela's collections that came out last year, Sourdough and Other Stories. So that will be amazing. I'll be at World Fantasy, so when she wins, I will get to go up and get her award. I have to wear no shoes.
What?
I'm supposed to go up barefoot.
No, if she what? Wins. You're going to World Fantasy?
Yeah.
You see what I did there? No. What, are you interviewing anyone for the podcast? It's not that sort of podcast, but have you thought about that?
No, probably not.
Okay.
I'm too tired.
Should we have it off camera?
Yes.
Are we on camera?
No.
Oh.
Anyway, so that's all I wanted to say.
So you think World Fantasy is a chance for 2020?
I would love to see it on the ballot. I think it's exactly the type of book that belongs on a World Fantasy ballot.
You're going to World Fantasy.
I am.
This year. I just mentioned that a minute ago. There's a lot of networking involved. Rather than network your own work, which, you know, I know you wouldn't be egotistical enough to do, network Never. Lisa L. Hannett's work. And see if you can't get it.
Oh, no, I definitely will be plugging this book because I think it's an excellent book and I highly recommend it to anyone who likes the dark fantastical. I think that's what I'm going to call it from now on, the dark fantastical.
Yeah, that's great. Copyright you. You know who else will be at the World Fantasy Awards?
Rob
Sheeran. This segue, not as good as the last one, but you ruined the last segue.
Shut up.
We gave her at least 33 minutes. Actually, how long did we speak for?
Oh, about 33 minutes.
Really? I've got an impeccable sense of brain timing.
You do.
I know. I'm
brain
that.
Timing.
That's what I call it. You've got your dark fantastical. I've got my brain timing.
Okay.
So everyone's just so special by Robert Sherman. I have a disclaimer.
Yes, you have a disclaimer.
I'm not in any awards. So I'm not judging anything because if I'm going to put up my hand for that's crap. No. Look, one day I will maybe. But no, Oreal is very, very reputable award. And what's the other one? Australian Shadows.
Yes.
Aureales is a very reputable award.
The Lisa,
you missed what I just did there.
Yes, stop it.
Oh, that was gold. You're not listening.
I'm
That's
a
your
judge.
Problem. So, but I do know Rob very well. That's my and I've as I've said to a number of people,
yep.
I don't have a filter critical filter when it comes to Rob's work. I fell in love with his work some time ago.
And you fell in love with him.
Yeah. Have I? Can I tell you the story how we met?
Tell the story.
It's beautiful. So I think it was Gallifrey.
Wait, I'll get my violin.
Can you not make fun of this? It's a beautiful story. All right.
Tell your beautiful story.
I think it was Gallifrey 2003. It might have been Gallifrey 2004.
Gallifrey, for the listeners.
That's Doctor Who convention in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is a very good convention. If you're a Doctor Who fan and you're going to go to one convention, you go to World Fantasy because that's probably better. But no, if you're going to go to a Doctor Who convention, go to Gallifrey because it's actually quite a lot of fun. And I went a couple of years. Anyway, the first year I went, I met Rob. And it was pointed out to me that that was Rob Shearman. He had just come out with his first Big Finished audio.
And you knew him because?
I didn't know him. I just, no.
But you knew of his name, didn't you?
Only because story?
I'm sorry.
He had just come out with his first Big Finished audio, The Holy Terror, which had gone down very well with the pundits, including myself.
And it was a Doctor Who.
Yeah. The Big Finished being a Doctor Who. Oh, you want me to go through, explain every acronym?
Well, for the people listening, yes.
Trust me, our audience know who these people are. So, Big Finish is a Doctor Who audio company that does Doctor Who audios, and they've been around for a number of years, and Rob did an audio for them. It should be pointed out that prior to that, Rob was a very successful playwright. I didn't know that. Neither did most Doctor Who fans. Anyway, I'll get to that in a sec. But anyway, so I walked up to him, as you do, I said to him, "Are you Rob Shearman?" He said, "Yes," in his beautiful British voice. And I said, "And you did The Holy Terror, yeah?" And he goes, "Yes." I said, "Christ, that was shit, wasn't it?"
You did not.
I did. That's exactly how I did it. And we became friends ever since. I used that on someone else, another author at the convention. That didn't go down so well. I won't say who. But no, it wasn't an author. It was the editor.
You won't say who.
No. Well, anyway, it didn't go down so well when I did it again because that person didn't pick up the sarcasm and stuff.
And stuff.
But Rob did. And as a result, Rob became and we hit it off really well.
Yes.
And he fell in love with me, as you would, because it's me. And I fell in love with him. And there's been much man-man love, ever since.
Excellent.
You didn't hear any of that, did you? Because if you had it, you'd have pointy-sticked me.
No, why? I'm not doing the pointy-stick tonight.
Why not?
Because you said I made you bleed last time, so feel bad.
So this is his third collection. Everyone's just so special. Now, when I read it 9 months ago, he hadn't written the bit that you're going to want to talk about, which I still haven't read. But we'll get to in a second. But this is the author of Tiny Deaths, which won a World Fantasy Award.
Deservedly so. That was an awesome debut collection.
And also the writer of, Love and Thingamajiggy, yeah.
Love Songs for the Shy.
Sorry, cynical. Yeah, well, it's a complicated title.
Hello, Rob.
Yeah, whatever. Which one is Shirley Jackson?
Yes.
Award for best, well, tied for best collection with some other bloke. did it deserve that?
Yes.
Did it deserve a World Fantasy that year? Didn't get one. Didn't get it on the collection list. No, I'm asking you.
I don't know. Maybe.
Wow. And now we've got number three. Everyone's just so special. Will this appear on a World Fantasy Award ballot?
I don't know.
Because it is a bit different than the other two.
It's quite a different – I mean, the tone of the stories aren't any different. They're Rob Shearman stories, which means they're good, very good. But the book itself is quite different. And I'll just say, Rob, if you're listening
– He is.
I hate you just a little bit.
No, you've said that actually before this. You said you hate him a lot.
A lot.
And not for like, because he's a great writer, hate.
Actual hate. Like actual, really, I will stab you with my pointy stick when I see your World Fantasy hate.
And what happened was, is that Rob had a few ideas about this book. A few. One of them was that he wanted to make it a bit different than the others. And so he's written a couple of very non-genre stories in this, like Dirt. Dirt is the one about the guy who falls in love with in love with Russia. Yep. It's a weird story, but it's got no genre elements. And
well, it's got no fantastical elements.
Okay, they're synonymous, aren't they? Well, what's the genre? What's the genre?
Well, so you've got you can get into the conversation about genre being a tone.
Because it feels tonally. Yeah,
and maybe that is because it's right in the middle of this book. And if you'd read it in the New Yorker or something, you wouldn't automatically go, "Ooh."
Tonally genre.
Yeah. But it is in the middle of this book, so it's sort of hard to judge.
And also the one about the woman who starts dating Jehovah's Witnesses, which is, that's a beauty. I love that story.
Oh, God, that's so funny, that story.
Yeah, extremely offensive, but, well, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, but very, very funny, which is called...
Oh, it's The Buzz? Something about The Buzz?
All The Buzz.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a, yeah. It's a very funny story, but also tonally, genre, but not fantastical. He also wanted to do longer works, and his longest work
And there
ever
are a couple
written,
of... Yeah, there are some long works in there.
There's an amazing novella, which we'll get to.
But, I mean, structurally, there's... The collection's broken up by years of the last couple thousand years.
Yes.
So from zero AD to kind of nowish. Well,
and he wanted to do a short story collection about the mediocrity of history. That's a way of putting it. Okay. And he wanted to do it in such a way, because not all the stories are about
that. No, they're not about, no.
But you've got interspersed between each story a sort of a calendar of events.
It's a calendar of events, but it's not just a dry list of years and what happened in them. It's you know there's the way he describes what happens in the years and so on, which sort of makes you know there's jokes in there and it's funny and but also within those installments which bookend every single story, there is a story within that. So it's not just. A timeline. There is actually a story.
The person writing the timeline
is
writing his own story.
That's right.
And possibly going insane as he's doing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, Kirsten, why do you hate Rob? Because this was one of the jokes he wanted to do. Write some. Oh, well, explain. Go on. Explain it.
Well, you get this book, and it's a very pretty book. It's a lovely dust jacket, which I don't believe you got because you got the
I got the special edition one, which comes in leather. That's the one problem I had with Big Finish.
Printed on baby skin and written in blood.
Yeah, but the problem I have with
written
Big Finish
in the blood of Rob Schumann
as publisher is that they don't put the cut. They don't at least give some plate in the book of the special the edition books with the beautiful cover.
I was kind of surprised that they don't just throw the dust jacket on the...
Well, maybe not because it's leather bound. So.
Yeah, but you can still put a dust jacket on it. Okay, leather gets dusty.
All right, but the specialty books that are leather bound usually, if they don't have the dust jacket, they'll have a plate.
Yeah, there'll be a plate
of the cover, and it doesn't have that, anyway. Which is a shame. But I got over it.
Please
Move
stop
on.
Whinging about the lack of dust jacket.
You brought it up.
So you get this beautiful book, and you open it up, and you look at the table of contents, and you go nom 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 20 odd Rob Schumann stories.
You do what? Nom, nom, nom? What the fuck?
Because, you know, they're yummy.
Oh, you eat his stories. That's interesting.
Well, you look forward to...
To
go yes. Nom, nom,
nom. Nom, nom. Yeah, gotcha. Keep going. Yep.
Anywho, and then you flip over the contents page and you just wonder if you just need to get a stronger pair of reading glasses. Because I think the font, I think that would be 0.2 font. I think it'd be 0.2. You reckon that's 0.2?
Yeah.
I think that's 0.2. And it's a whole page. It's a whole page with like a centimetre margins around the outside.
And it's a block of text.
And it's a block of text, no paragraphs, no spacing, no line breaks, just a block of flat text that if you kind of just look at from a foot away just looks like a blur. And, you know, to be honest, if you look at it from 5 seconds away, 5 centimetres away, it looks kind of like a blur. I had to go and buy a magnifying glass.
And another one. You had to buy this sheep magnifying glass
Well,
thing.
My lovely husband had one, like a little old round Sherlock Holmes type magnifying glass, which was really cool. And I was reading with the magnifying glass, but it was making me motion sick because I had to keep swinging it across the page. And so then I went out and bought a sheet, but that wasn't any good because it wasn't very sharp. I should say that not all the stories are in this font, just the timelines in between the stories.
Yes.
The actual stories themselves
are in a normal font.
Decent-sized font. But I had the weirdest relationship with this book because I didn't read it in one sitting. I was sort of reading it mostly at night before bed. So, and as you kind of tend to do with a short story collection, you finish a story and you put a bookmark in and you put the book away and you go to sleep and then the next night you pick it up. And so you'd pick it up and you'd be greeted again by this wall of text. In front of the next short story. So I had this mixture of really enjoying the stories I was reading and being incredibly, genuinely resentful of the book, of having to read that bit in between each short story. Like genuine resentment. It was like I'd pick it up and go, oh, for fuck's sake.
You know you don't have to read them.
Oh, I do.
Because he has clearly referenced.
I did actually. As soon as I found the first joke in, I think the second story, and went, "Oh crap! There's actually a story in here. This isn't just."
Oh, I haven't read it. Is it good?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's not just like if it was just here's a timeline and I'm making a few jokes about history. I probably could have gone, yeah, all right, stuff you, Rob. Have your joke. But there's a story in there. And yes, that story actually kind of ties into the Hulk. So you have to read it, Ian. You have
Rob,
to read it.
I rang Rob up and he said to me, Ian, you don't have to read it. He said, it's a gag. He said, actually, I won't say all he said, but one of the problems is it's possibly not small enough.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the things he wants the reader to do is, if they're going to take it seriously like you did, is to go out and really get a great magnifying glass and do it. He wants you to put in effort for that part.
I put in the effort.
Now, it's interesting because he was reviewed in The Scotsman.
Right.
Because he's, and they've done this brilliant review, right, and they didn't mention the little writing once.
I think they didn't read it.
No, they did because they loved a couple of the stories and they really adored it. I mean, the Scotsman reviewed him because he's now the writer in residence at Edinburgh University.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's Edinburgh University.
Oh, yes, he had that on Facebook.
Yeah. So they're now treating him like a long lost son, and but that's he was compared. I think I said in Gary and Jonathan's podcast, he was compared to China Mavel,
which is weird.
And a few other writers I've never heard of, but. No, I think I had heard of them, but that is weird. It's an odd connection.
Maybe just in terms of stature rather than
content. It's not content. The point is saying that China Mavel and these other three or four writers are great writers, GW capitals.
Right.
And so is Rob.
And that's how they said it, just in brackets there.
The thing is, that was one of the little games he wanted to play. He wanted to put the little writing interspersed, and Kirsten fell for it and enjoyed it, though, at the end.
I hate you, Rob. I hate you.
But you enjoyed the story, didn't you?
I did, but not nearly as much as some of the other ones in the book.
Oh, okay.
Like even if it had been in normal font, I mean, it's a good story, but you know, it's in the middle.
The plan was to keep every historical timeline on one page, but some of them go for two pages, and I think that
about half of them actually. Once I think it flips over to about 1000 AD, there's just too much happening in history for the one page, so you get two full pages of.
And two the thing point about Rob font. Is that he'll start these things. Whereas we'll talk about the next thing that he's doing with this book. He'll start these things, realise he's insane, but he won't stop.
He won't stop.
Because most people, because he didn't have to. You could.
Well, you
if those bits had not been in there.
I didn't stop, did I?
No, but if those bits, those interspersed bits, the timelines had not been in there, you wouldn't have known. No one would have known.
No.
Maybe I would have because he told me about what he was going to do. But he kept on going. And the fact of the matter is, that's part of the ambition of the book.
Yeah.
He wanted to do something different. And. We haven't actually spoken about the stories yet, but the third thing he's done, should we talk about that later?
We can talk about that later.
Okay, we'll talk about the story.
So what was the second thing?
That was the second thing. Well, the first thing was he wanted to do some tonally genre fantastic. Second thing was the timeline.
Yeah,
and the third thing we'll talk about in a second.
Okay.
What do you think of the collection?
Well, separating it from my resentment of it. Which was so weird. I have never read a book that I resented so much and yet enjoyed. I mean, I'm used to maybe resenting a book that I'm not enjoying, but I have to read for whatever reason. I don't do that very often these days, which is better. But I this is the first time I've read a book that I have absolutely resented almost as much as I've absolutely loved it. It was really weird. It was like the worst kind of cognitive. Creative dissonance you could imagine. I even got to the point where I'd start it and I'd read one of those horrible bits and then I'd read a story and then I think, no, wait, I'm going to read another horrible bit so tomorrow night I can just go straight into a story.
You know, if he was listening to this, and I know he is,
he's going to be pissing himself laughing.
He's just going to say, why didn't you just, you could have just read all the stories and then read all the little bits in one go.
Then my eyes would have fallen out of my head.
Well, so you read them on the toilet when you go to the toilet.
No, I've got to read. What?
Don't you read on the toilet? You don't want to touch my iPhone or iPad or anything in my house. Men do that.
Yeah, okay.
I bet you Jason does.
No, I don't think he does.
Doesn't he read on the pooer? Okay. The stories, please.
But
yes.
That aside,
yes.
There were some absolutely amazing stories in this book. And I really loved it. I mean, it's a very long collection. There are 21 stories, and
it's over 200,000 words.
Yeah, it's quite
double,
long.
It's actually more than double.
And the thing is,
the
he had
two.
To put that amount of stories in to fit with the structure of the book. So, because I mean, to be honest, there are a couple in here that are, you know, if you'd just taken a couple out, like if it had been a bit of a shorter collection, I think that it might have.
It's something he did. I mean, I know I'm talking with specialised knowledge.
And this is the problem. I mean, this is the problem because he's got this structure, so he has to have these stories. He's got to have 21 stories. He has to do that. So there's no way to go, well, actually, maybe I should only have 16. Maybe I should save some more for another collection. Because it wasn't as though there was any story in there that I thought, wow, this is – why is this being published? Like every story was good. You know, yeah, some were better than others, but there wasn't anything in there that I went, geez, to phone this one up. But it was just a long, long book to read, and as I said to you earlier,
it's an intense book to read as well. It's not something you just lie back and guzzle down.
And for that, because we spoke earlier about Lisa's book and how we're talking about the tone of the book and the voice and the sort of the taste it left with you, and that's an advantage of reading a collection which is tighter and has that, whereas when you read a collection that's so long and has such tiny font,
get over it.
You lose that condensed idea of what it's like.
That's interesting, because I would argue that's not the case. because it's a collection. I mean, put aside the little writing, the timelines, because you can get caught up in that. And I think that's probably one concern that I would have if I was wrong.
But, you know,
that reviewers are going to get caught up in the little timeline stuff.
But it's a way of reading the book.
15 minutes in it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But the thing is that there is intensity to the stories that sort of forces you that you can't read them. You can read one after the other, but you sort of – in a sense, he's
putting that in there to stop you reading more than one story.
No, absolutely not. No, he's luring you in with his stories, but then by the end, he's pushing you away, and I think saying, "Let that soak in for a bit." That's the way I look at it.
But you didn't even read it with that there.
I'm not talking about the timelines. I'm talking about forget the timelines.
Okay,
take them out.
Okay,
remove timelines.
Yes,
I'm taking the stories themselves. Each one has not. They're not all a punch in the guts. It's not all that. But there is an intensity to most of them that requires a bit of processing.
Yeah, I mean, they're good stories. I mean, I think that, I mean, that's the
and
case.
Same with Lisa's, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the case when you read short
fiction. Because I didn't read Lisa's in 2 days. I read that over a week. I wanted to really savour it, and I did. And the same with this one. I actually think opposite to you. I mean, I understand what you're saying. You can read it over 2-3 days and you get that thematic enjoyment of it by the end. But I think the collections that I really love are the ones that, A, you don't want them to finish, and B, the stories themselves are like a meal, even though they're short.
Yeah.
And that's what you got with both these collections.
Oh, no, definitely. I don't know. I've just found it a very odd reading experience, and I'm still sort of processing that.
And this is someone who's read, Leaves of Shithouse or whatever it's called?
I'm recommending that next
What's
year.
It called?
House of Leaves.
House of Leaves. Which is but that's awesome. Different because you know going in that it's going to be this weird postmodern take
well,
on.
No, no. Well, not only that, because House of Leaves, I think I am actually going to recommend it to you next year.
Oh, fuck, please don't.
But, I mean, that book, the difficulty of reading that book for those who don't know it, it's textually it's quite physically chopped up on the page. It's a very you just go pick it up in a bookshop and have a flick through, and it doesn't look like a normal book. You know, you've got text everywhere.
So how's that different? Why
don't
you resent that?
The difficulty of reading that book actually tied in with the story that book was telling. He's done it, and I was very dubious when I started reading it because it'd been recommended to me, and I thought, oh, bit of wank. But the way, I mean, we will talk about this book later, but the way he did it was it tied into that book. It fed into your physical reading experience of that book tied into the story of that book. And this is not the case with Rob's book.
You are going to recommend that to me in 2012.
I think I'm going to now. I think you just made me.
Ian. All right. No, that's okay. I mean, what about the stories?
Stories themselves. Yes. Well, it makes me want to talk about the collection because it's a book that's obviously written. You know, when you produce a book like this, you obviously have something to say about it. So I don't think you just push aside the formatting and the structure because he's obviously
I'm not pushing
incredibly
it aside.
Intentional.
I'm not pushing it aside. I'm just saying that I'm worried that will become the be-all and end-all of reviews from people saying, oh, I can barely read the little font. And it drove me mad, and that's a shame because there are books out there. See, here's the thing. This is where I can't. This is what the thing I kept saying to Rob while he was writing.
We don't have to go on about the font.
Well, I'm not just about the font. That the thing about this book is that it is trying to be not trying to be pretentious at all. It's trying to be a bit ambitious. He's pushing himself as a writer.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see that in the story.
He's pushing himself in this third one, And it's being it's
okay,
it's,
but you know what? I think this is my problem with the book. And you know, I'll buy you a drink at World Fantasy, Rob. But really, the stories in here are so good. Like, some of them are just out of the park, fucking amazing.
Like?
Wait a second.
Okay,
they're so amazing. And I think what he's done with the timelines, you know what? It's timey-wimey is what it is. It's gimmicky. It doesn't add to the book. Okay. It detracts from some of these stories, which are amazing, because it just has the feel of a gimmick about it. And I say that because I've thought about it a lot, and I may be wrong, but I can't see, apart from, you know, the fact that you say it was just a joke.
Well, no, there's
just
a historical aspect to it as well.
No, but I can't see the point in structuring that particular story and typesetting the story and doing it that way. That layout, that setting, the way he's pieced it out, it doesn't seem to add to the story.
All right.
Or to the collection. And so I just, yeah, I don't know. I felt like he could have taken that out. It wouldn't have mattered to the collection at all, and it wouldn't be this distraction. And I think that's what it is. I think it's a distraction.
As I said, I didn't read it with the timey-wimey gimmick in it, as you're now calling it.
That's a Doctor Who reference, sorry. But, I mean, that's the thing. And so you have read quite a different book. You've actually had quite a different reading experience to me.
I also didn't read it as a book. I read it online.
Yeah, but you read all the stories.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that.
Anyway. Yeah, shut up, Ian. Anyway, so that aside, I'd like to talk about some of the stories because some of them are absolutely awesome. I had actually read the Santa Claus one before. That's the only one I'd read before because it was published somewhere online about a couple of years ago. I remember reading it.
Well, it should be in the book. It should say where it's.
Yeah, anyway. So Cold Snap.
Yeah, Cold Snap.
Which is an awesome story, and I remember just enough of it for it to be familiar, but I'd actually forgotten the ending again. And it's just
his stories are rereadable.
You think you know where the story's going,
yes,
and you would have been quite happy if the story went there. It's not like it felt predictable or something. It's just you had an idea of where you're going to end up, and you ended up somewhere completely different. And it was, yeah, it's such a good story.
Cold Snap was in issue 7 of The Lifted Brow.
Ah, there we go.
Yes.
I knew I'd read it. Yeah, and I really love it. I love one of the things that there's two things that always stand out about Rob Shearman's work, and one is that they're, which is why the mediocrity of history that he was talking about with you is pertinent, because he writes stories about ordinary people, people who are mediocre, and sometimes nothing particularly special even happens to them. I mean, something a bit strange, a bit weird, but I mean, they're ordinary sort of mediocre people, and they're the people he writes about, which is great. And the other thing he does amazingly well, possibly better than almost any other writer I can think of, is the way he manages to integrate his fantastical elements so completely into the stories from pretty much from the first paragraph, or certainly from their first mention, and they're just there, and there's no explanation, there's no justification, there's nothing. He just has this seamless integration of whatever's happening.
You know where he does it really well?
He does it amazingly.
The cat that eats the endangered species.
Oh, my God, that story.
Isn't that hilarious? And it's also heart-rending because it's about...
That story was so... Yeah, that was one of the stories that's kind of gutting.
Yeah.
But he does this.
Because on the surface it's about a cat that eats endangered species.
That brings home endangered species.
And just eats them or kills them.
It's like a cat.
It's like a little cat that brings home...
White rhinoceros.
Yeah, white rhinoceroses to the backyard.
And so on.
Yeah. But it's actually a story about loss.
Not just a cat.
And possibly. But that's you're saying. It's not explained. But it's a story entirely about loss. Yeah. And it's gutting in many ways. Yeah.
And he does this. He has this absolutely enviable ability to – because it's hard. It's really hard. It's really hard as a writer to – tread that line between introducing something fantastical and then feeling the need to have to explain it to the readers. And, you know, a lot of writers do it and they don't explain it, and it's just kind of crap because you say, well, why did that happen? It makes no sense. But Rob's able to just integrate this into the story and the characters just amazingly well. It's the best thing he does with his work. Because almost – well, not almost always, 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 whatever that fantastical element is, it's so deeply ground in metaphor and analogy and symbolism. So it's he's not just writing stories about a cat that brings home endangered species. He's writing about stuff that's so important, and the way he can write about it without it, it being, I guess, too sentimental or too melodramatic, which it never is. But the reason he can avoid sentimentality and melodrama is by bringing in these elements which he can then tell a story about. And you know what he's talking about. But he just doesn't have to come out and say it.
No, it's, that's
and he's done that across his entire body of work, and it's one of the things I love about Shearman. And it's one of the things, I mean, you know, broadly speaking, it's one of the things I love about the best of genre fiction. That's why I read genre fiction. That's why I've read it my entire life, and that's why I write it, because you get to talk about things under a veil, so to speak. It's like that polite thing where people – you know, they're talking about something, but they're actually talking about something else. And the fact that they're not really talking about that enables them to talk about it.
Well, it's interesting because Rob himself, you're talking about the best of genre fiction, Rob himself probably doesn't entirely identify as a genre writer. He's, in a sense that, well, I don't want to speak for him. No, it's wrong to speak for him. I've only been doing it for the last half hour. He can't, in a sense, he came from nowhere because the UK spec fic scene.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between being within the genre community.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, but that's what we assume, though. If you're writing genre, you're in the community. Unless you're Margaret Atwood.
I don't assume that.
No? Well, no, that's because you're a good person.
Okay.
Well, no, it's just, no, but it's interesting that he sort of, for some people, just appeared out of nowhere, which he did, even though he
And then he won a World Fantasy Award.
And well, but he didn't appear out of nowhere because he had obviously the Doctor Who stuff, but also the playwright stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
well, he appeared out of nowhere, as you say, within the community. The community hadn't heard about him. It's like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
What's he doing winning a World Fantasy? What's he doing winning one of our awards?
Yeah, that's right. and I still think they're not this a suspicion.
Which is the problem.
I don't think there's a suspicion about Rob Shearman, but there's still a bit – I don't think he's entirely being taken on as one of ours within the community. In the UK, yes, but I think outside the UK, I'm not
sure. Well, is he that well known outside the UK? Well, I mean, these are big Finnish books. All three of his are big Finnish books.
No, the first one's Comma. These last two.
Oh, you're right. They're not the most widely known.
No, that's true. But we're a community that loves our indie press.
Yeah.
And these are, and apparently, you know, I mean, the limited edition's all sold.
You get to take home a pint of Rob's blood with one of those.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, so he sells reasonably well, as far as I'm aware. So, yeah, it's just interesting. He sort of, he exists a bit like his stories, in and out. He's tonally. Tonally genre, but he's not necessarily in the community. So, And I think part of the reason why I think he's quite fresh, and that he's not following a trend within the community itself. He's not trying to get, he's not trying to aim to a certain market. He's not trying to get into Asimov's. He's not trying to get into Interzone. He doesn't actually give a shit about any of that. If someone like Steve Jones has fallen in love with him, as far as I'm told. So Steve Jones has taken a number of his stories and put them in collections and stuff. But Rob's not writing for any of those markets. He's writing his thing.
Yeah.
And if it happens to be picked up by one of those, fantastic. And I think that's why I love – there's a freshness to the work, even though this is his third book.
Yeah.
And you could say there's some repetition. There isn't. It's just Rob. Rob who's never been
– Well, I mean, there is repetition. But
a
it's
theme,
not,
but not
but
a
– Well, it's not a bad repetition. I mean, there's a difference between – I mean, what writers like Rob Shearman do Lisa, I think, is doing this kind of thing as well. And Margot Lanigan and you know, I mean, the repetition you get is their voice, their concerns, what they're writing about. And it's not a repetition, it's a familiarity. you read one of Rob's collections and the stories that you've not read before, they're familiar. They're familiar because the voice is familiar. The way he tells the stories is familiar. But that's not a bad thing.
No, I'm not saying – well, no, I agree.
Yeah.
I think in the Doctor Who fan circles, which obviously, you know, the middle and end all of criticism, there was a feeling with his Big Finish plays that after the third play it was the same story again. But really what he always argued was that he was taking a different – he was looking at a single theme from a different side of the coin sort of stuff. So it looked similar on the surface, but actually if you went deeper it wasn't. And you could argue – because he's got a very singular voice. There is a Rob Sherman voice.
Yes, definitely.
You cannot mistake a Rob Sherman story. That there's that sense of repetition potentially about it due to the voice. And in a bad way. It's just the same old, same old.
I think one of the problems the genre community has, which I think I see increasing, unfortunately, is an undue emphasis on novelty. And I think, I mean, novelty's great and people, you know, but there's also a depth that you lose if all you do is brand new, completely out of the box banking stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and when you follow an author, and I'm very much a reader who follows authors. If I find someone I like, I'll just read everything they write, and I'll get their back catalogue or read them all until they at some point lose me, which occasionally happens. And when you read an author and what you're reading for them is the way they tell stories.
That's why we read Stephen King.
That's why you read Stephen King, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Dark Tower aside, Stephen King's books aren't. They're not in a series. They're not.
No, but they're the same voice.
The same voice.
Use of colloquialisms, all that stuff.
And and generally the same concerns.
Yeah, you're right.
The same types of characters, the same concerns, the same thematic detail. But the point is every time you read one of Rob Sherman's stories or one of Stephen King's books, you get a different facet of whatever it is that they're concerned about. And that depth is really, really rewarding as a reader.
Yeah.
To get that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's dazzling to read a book. And I mean, you got that with Lisa's book too. And it's quite dazzling to read a book where every story is completely different and the tone's different and the structure's different and the style's different and the character's different and it's set here and it's set there and it's set somewhere else. And it's like, wow, it's amazing. But the depth is, I think what we like. It's what I love about Kelly Link's work, actually. She's another author.
She's similar to Rob. I haven't read much Kelly Link. I've read a bit.
In terms of – I think she's similar to Rob in that she has a very distinctive voice. I mean, as you said with his stories, there's no mistaking a Kelly Link story. She's a lot less linear than Rob tends to be.
Okay.
Although there were some very interesting stories in this book in that linear, non-linear sense. But she tends to be a lot less linear than, which is one of the great things about her work. And again, you follow an author, you read their work, and you read.
It's not about comfort reading. You're not talking about comfort reading.
I don't do comfort reading.
No, you're talking about. It's you fell in love with a particular voice and a particular style.
It's a voice. It's the way they see the world. It's the way they report back to you on how they see the world.
Yep.
And that's why we read, isn't it? We read because because we're one brain.
Wow, this has become really deep and meaningful.
But I mean, isn't it? We have one brain.
No, you're right.
We have one brain. We have one way of looking at the world. We have one way of perceiving the world. And we read so we can see how other people perceive the world.
And the way Lisa and Rob perceive the world are ways that I want to read about.
Exactly.
I mean, you've got here, I mean, Time's Table is the longest story. Which is astonishing. And actually, it was Rob's a chance to write a 35,000 word story.
That was one of those stories that started out, and I was thinking, "Oh, okay, this is kind of cute and everything." And it's it just every time you thought it's gotten kind of as bad as it can get, it got worse.
Yeah, and I should say, look, there are some stories in here that are the horror. He's written more horror recently because of Stephen Jones, and you know, Featherweight. Yeah, that's the one about the people trapped in a car. Is pretty gruesome, but
that was very gruesome.
I love, and it is scary. I genuinely was scared by it. The one about the kids eating their faces.
And the magician one.
Yeah. Yeah. The way Rob describes it, and we're not going to read it.
It's really matter of fact kind yes. of. Yeah.
It's even the into reportage way of describing it, but it is, oh my God, under the skin.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love Restoration, which was the gallery.
To me, Restoration actually is his most accessible story from a genre of fic community. Because,
yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And if there was one story, and I've been saying this to a few people, there's one story for this year, because a lot of these stories are new to 2011, that should be nominated for a World Fantasy or a Hugo or whatever, you know, because of its accessibility. Restoration is it, because it's a basic – it's got that SF-nal element. It's got that overt fantasy. It's about angels and art. And
People working – well, not people.
Angels.
Angels working in art gallery, curating
the arts, world. The world, but curating the world, yeah. And it's got an amazing ending. It's one of those – if I had to pick – you know, I do Last Short Story, and with Last Short Story I could easily – because there's 21 stories in there, about 17 are original to this year, and of those, about 12 or 13 are genre – fantastique. And I could easily give all of them fives and four and a halfs out of fives, which is how we mark on Last Short Story. But I realise that that'll just be seen as, favouritism.
You know what?
It'll be seen sickening. And so I think I've picked Restorations, the story that I think that from an overall way of looking at things, that's the one. Although I think the one with the magician is a perfect stoker.
Oh.
Or Featherweight.
Yeah, no, I think the magician one is – but I think
What?
I don't know. Times Table is really...
It's a brilliant novella, but it is intense. It is genuinely grueling. And Acronyms, which is in there, which has got sort of... And that's one of those clever ones. It's got a lot of nested stories in it. And it all sort of...
And it ties in at
the end. Ties in is just another... Again, him pushing himself, doing something different.
Actually, you know what? One of the ones I really loved, what? And it was a happy story, actually. It was Without You, I Wouldn't Be Alive, which was the one with the woman working in the op shop and the inscriptions. And a man comes in and he collects books that have inscriptions in them.
Yeah. That gave me close to tears.
And yeah. And the ending of that story is just beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
It's... Yeah,
so I know you love Patches as well.
And Patches, the sky. God.
Patches is a beautiful story, and I think it should be nominated for a bazillion awards, but I can't see our community nominated. You know what I'm saying?
I guess so. I guess you put your best horse in the race is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think that's probably even a better story than Restoration, Patches. Yeah. Patches is just astonishing.
I think Patches is amazing. I think Endangered Species is fantastic.
Any story about a cat that brings home endangered species and ones that are much bigger than the bloody cat and yet is gutting as well is a
it's a fantastic collection. I'm just sort of flicking through it,
and each time you look at a story you think
I really like Dirt, which was the one about the girl who's obsessed with Russia, and the resolution of that story is really, really cool. And yeah, no, there's just fantastic, fantastic stories in this. I just kind of wish it was a little. I would probably pull six out.
Which ones?
I think I'd pull six out.
I know you'd pull out.
Don't make me name them.
Yeah, fuck it. Why not? That's what the show's about.
He's a
mate. But
no. Rob, you're gonna hurt me, aren't you?
No. If he doesn't like it, he can write in and yell at us.
All right. Well, I'll preface this by saying none of them are bad. They were the weaker ones. I'd probably pull – I mean, because they're all shorter ones too, actually, though. I'd pull out The Runt, which I thought – it was an okay story. I just
– Yeah, it's – he wrote – it was a much shorter story than he lengthened a bit. But, yeah, yep, okay.
I would
– Yeah, I accept that. All right, I'll go with that. No, yeah. I mean, I like – it's funny. It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And I think it actually plays an important role there. It lightens up some of the darker stories towards the end.
Yeah, I guess
anyway,
so.
But that's besides the point.
So, I don't know. It's funny. I actually, as much as I do kind of like it, I'd probably pull out All the Buzz, which is the Jehovah's Witness story. I would probably possibly pull out Ink Blots, which is
the
hospital one.
Yep.
And Soap Bubble I would take out, which is the one about the little boy who is a lookalike. And again, most of these are shorter stories, so it's not going to reduce the collection so much.
That's four.
I like Dead Romans.
Come on, you're not pulling out dead Romans. You're not pulling out dead Romans. That's got the best conversation between
it
a
does.
Pope
no,
and
does.
A person, and the Pope is in an ice cream shop,
and again,
in the history of stories.
I'm not saying...
And it's not a genre piece.
No, again, I'm not saying they're bad stories. I'm just saying if I was going to shorten the collection, these are the ones I'd pull out as being less cohesive thematically with the rest
really,
of the
Really? You
book.
Think dead Romans? It's all about history. It's all about the rubble of history and the rubble of a marriage.
See, I don't think this book's about history.
It's about mediocrity.
Yeah, I don't think it's about history. And I think forcing the structure doesn't make it about history.
Mm. I know. So I love the last story about the Twin Towers.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, it was a nice little...
He thought that that story was going to get him a lot of hate.
Oh, just because it's about the Twin Towers?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
And the fact that when, you know, what happens is with taking too much of the Twin Towers,
they come back.
They come back and people walk into them.
And then they disappear
and they come back. But each time they come back, they smell worse. There's a stench of decay about them.
Yeah.
You mean that weird look? And that one got nominated for a very prestigious short story thingamajiggin in the UK, but didn't win. Terrible role, should have won.
It's hard.
So I go, but you've done a pretty good job there.
Have I?
Pulling out five stories. Now we haven't talked about the third, we're nearly done, but we haven't talked about the third thing about this collection.
Oh, yes, because he's insane.
And so Rob decided that he would write little vignettes. And when I say little, I mean little vignettes.
Yes. 300-400 words.
300-400 words for the 100 people using their names, Tuckerism and that.
And they were meant to be little histories.
Little histories of an ancestor of that
Kirsten
person. McDermott buys the limited edition book, and there's a story about Kirsten McDermott that she was there when Jesus was stabbed. Or whatever. Oh, no, I don't know.
I've got an alibi.
Yeah, all right, whatever. and Rob, not Kirsten, Rob, would Robify it in the way Rob does.
Yes.
But Rob's insane.
And he started doing this. So
he did.
Yeah, he did. He's got a WordPress blog.
There's a WordPress blog which we'll give a link to.
Yep.
He's done my story.
Yes.
Where I'm not actually a character, rather my name, Love You, Mondian.
Yes, Mond means love and Ian means you.
So he created a whole new language lexicon as part of the story. It's a really good story.
It is a really good story.
It is an awesome story.
I've read almost all of them. I haven't read the last couple.
In fact, it's as good. It's probably could be in a collection.
Well, the ones I've read, I haven't read the last one, and I think one just went up about 10 minutes ago before we started the podcast, so I haven't read that one either, obviously. But of the ones I've read, they're good stories.
This is the problem with Rob. He couldn't just do vignettes. He wanted them to be perfect.
No, you're looking at 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 words. You're looking at 100 actual stories.
He's actually, in a sense, writing two books, two short story collections.
Well,
Or more.
I mean, if he ends up with 100 stories.
He's going to do it.
And those stories average 3,000 to 4,000 words each.
He's going to do it. He's told me every time I've spoken to him,
he
said, I'm doing it. He may take a few breaks in between.
I think so.
It will kill him. But, I mean, he's like,
the idea was
to story
get
18
it,
or 19.
The idea was to do it all in 1 year, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there's no way it'll be done by Christmas. You can forget about that.
Yeah.
That's impossible. But he's literally – and this is the thing about him. His imagination is as fertile as anyone's in writing anything at the moment. Because those stories, the ones he's writing now, not that I've read many of them except for mine, but from what I understand is that they're not literally just a retake on the same idea he used.
No, definitely not.
They're all fresh and new and different.
They are fresh stories. There's a couple – I mean, there was one about a woman who's in this little German town before one of the wars. I can't remember what the name of the – I keep thinking Bremen, but it's not Bremen, or it might be Bremen. And it's this amazing story about this woman who cooks, and she's kind of hated by the village, and it's this amazing, amazing Rob Sherman story. And there's another of the 17, 16, 17, or however many that I've read, at least half of them, you know, you and again, they're all good.
Hilariously, some of the best short stories you'll read. Some of the best short stories you'll read this year, you can read on that site.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I mean,
it's insane.
Good. It's insane.
And he's doing. And this was a laugh. This was Love Songs for the Shy and Cynical. He wrote a story. He hand wrote a story, and that drove him mad because his hand nearly fell off. And so the point was to do something also nice but shorter and easier.
He hand wrote a story.
Yeah, he hand wrote about a 300-word story.
Oh, to give out to people.
Yeah,
I got
envelopes.
Right,
there
right.
were envelopes, and they're hidden in the story.
Okay.
So like the envelopes are nested, and it's really – so you meant to open one envelope, and there's one part of the story, then you open up the next envelope. He did that.
Oh, wow.
And apparently his handwriting gets worse and worse. He's losing blood supply. And so he wanted to do something that was less taxing on him. Yeah. So instead he picked something
physically, that, less taxing physically in terms of the handwriting.
Yes, that's about all.
Yeah. Because,
no, he wanted to do something that actually was less taxing full stop, and in the end has done something that's infinitely more complicated.
He's insane. He's absolutely insane.
Yes. And he's still writing other short stories because he's got a couple of new ones out. I mean, he's actually now become very prolific.
Yeah. I really enjoy reading.
So you recommend this?
I absolutely recommend that. Definitely. I mean, despite my reservations about the structure and the length, I don't think Rob Sherman's ever going to write a short story collection that I don't recommend, quite frankly. He has one of the most, you talk about accessible. The voice in his stories for all of the subject matter, which can get quite disturbing sometimes. The voice in his stories is so accessible. They're so easy to read. I mean, if you've heard him read aloud, which if you search on YouTube, I'm sure you can find clips of him doing readings. He's an amazing reader, and the reason his stories work the way they do is because you can read them aloud. So the narrative drive behind those stories is someone telling you a story. You know, which is quite different. It's a different thing to some stories can only really be read on the page. They don't lend themselves to being read aloud, which is not a criticism of those stories. It's just a different type. But the accessibility of Rob Sherman's voice is
absolutely
phenomenal. And, you know, I mean, with his history in playwriting, his dialogue is spot on. His dialogue's fantastic.
Yeah, and you're tough on dialogue.
I am tough on dialogue. But his dialogue's amazing.
I'm proud to be his close friend. I am. He's a mate, and I'm proud to be that. And yes.
Excellent. So
we're done. So that's two books we're highly recommending.
Highly recommending.
Now, the Rob one is available from Big Finish, but I don't think it'll be an e-book, at least not in the foreseeable future. And
that's because he doesn't want anyone to be able to increase the size of that font.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Correct. He wants to punish. But you can get free Rob Sherman on that WordPress blog.
Yes, we will link to that. And he started off putting a story up every couple of days. They've slowed down a little, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, because he just.
I'm sure you can probably expect one every week or so for the foreseeable future. He's got about another 80 odd to write.
Yeah, it's not much. it's one of the most insane projects of all time. Anyway, let's not keep talking about Rob. So those are two fantastic books. Next month is episode 13. So in a sense, season two.
Season two.
So we should have a cliffhanger for this season.
The books you're going to have to read for next month. Oh. Good night.
Ah, that's brilliant. Yeah, we just said, it went to static. Will they return? We're going to start season two with a special guest.
We are.
And this is a very special guest.
He's a very special guest.
We've had some great guests, but he's the best. No, he's
you
not.
Say that to all the guests.
I do. It's John Richards from Box Cutters.
Yes.
And
I love Box Cutters. I don't even watch television and I love Box Cutters.
And for that episode, we'll have a link. It's very much a show about – it's a podcast about Australian TV, but it's very accessible to non-Australians because it's actually extremely funny.
Yeah, and accessible to people who don't really watch
– any TV at all.
The TV that they talk about.
And have no idea who Ray Martin is. Or Daryl Summers. So John Richards is extremely funny. Well, I'm expecting that podcast will probably go for 3 hours. Let's be honest.
Oh, God.
Because we'll be talking for a good 50 minutes with him before we even get to the books, and we're doing three books. It could be one of the longest podcasts in the history of – it'll make the Julia Rios one we just did. And we don't really edit. She edited. I mean, she was amazing. We won't.
I might need to edit. Anyway.
All right. The three books we're doing – actually, for the next 2 months, as part of the early part of season two, we're not actually doing any genre books or fantastique.
Well, unless you talk about tone.
Oh, fuming tone. So, well, okay, maybe. So the three books are Generation X, Tales of an Accelerator Culture by Douglas Copeland.
Copeland, yep.
Room by Emma Donoghue, which is my recommendation.
Yes.
John's is the Generation X. And The Secret History by Donna Tartt, which is Kirsten's recommendation.
Yes.
They're three crunchy books.
They are.
Really, this will be the longest podcast of all time. And I won't say what we're doing for December, but they're also very non-genre-ish.
No, I wouldn't say that.
They're not. There are no space aliens in them.
Oh, because space aliens are genre makes.
Look, do you want to start that fight? So, on that note, those are three great books, I hope, because I haven't read any of them, including the one that I'm recommending.
My God, you've got like a month, Ian.
Well, no, we're going to – well, this
is – yeah, actually, it'll be a bit longer than that because I'm coming away.
Yeah, because you're coming away World Fantasy. There'll probably be a six-week gap between this episode and season two. But
that's if I've gotten this up before I left.
There was nothing to edit. It'll be fine.
Yeah,
you do it like in 24 hours. So there will be a mid-season gap of some distance. I'm really pushing the season thing.
Oh, my God. It wouldn't be a mid-season, it'd be end season, wouldn't it?
Yes, whatever. On that note.
Sorry, I was just trying to play along.
On that note.
On that note.
It's.
You didn't.
What? Oh, shit. The Fuck, sorry.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Christ. Please send feedback to comment at the website at writerandcritic.podbean.com. Stop laughing. Email writerandcritic@gmail.com. And ratings, 5 stars, of course, on iTunes. And to the two, I think one of them was Grant and another person who we haven't commented on their comments. Yes, we're aware that Hunger Games is a ripoff of Battle Royale. I just wanted to say that. Because that's something I was going to mention in that episode 3 months ago, but I forgot to. Yeah. And then two people brought it up, and I felt like an idiot, and I just want to say it now. Yes, Hunger Games and Battle Royale are basically the same thing, except one's got Japanese people in it. That's all. That's not racist. It's true. It's got Japanese people. Why are you looking at me like that? You're not editing that bit. On that note, 5 stars on iTunes.
Stop it.
Sorry. Well, why would you bother? That's a good night from me.
Why do you sound like Ricky Gervais then?
Did I?
Watch Buffer.
Good night for me.
Good night.
See ya.
See you next month.
Bye.
Bye.